Hello and welcome to Money Mastery and Financial Planning, a podcast for women with your host, Rebecca Robertson. We're going to be focusing on maximising your money, creating wealth and empowering financial success. For more information about us, head over to our website, www.rebeccarobertsonevo.co.uk. Enjoy.
Hello, I am Rebecca Robertson and I'm here as your host as the Money Mastery Financial Planning for Women podcast. I'm really excited to get going with this and I'm pretty determined to make a bloody good job of it. Reason being, you know, what is Sean about? A lot of my people tell me you're so passionate about what you do and they really see that when I'm throwing my arms around explaining things and talking about stuff in a way that just people want to listen and they want to engage and they say, oh, what? Why, you know, you're so passionate about this. And I am, I really am. And I'd like to talk a little bit about why that is. So it means going back a little bit and telling you a little bit about my story and my background. But before I do that, I started this business of mine 8 years ago. So I'll tell you about what I do and how I work at some stage, but going back to 8 years ago, I wanted to start a business for helping women with financial planning. So we're talking 2011. And then there wasn't this, you know, glass ceiling, you know, women at boardroom level. There was no talk of really women's empowerment at that stage. And I was quoted in an industry magazine. It was a mortgage broker, financial planning brokerage magazine, and there was a particular gentleman who worked for a very well-known brokerage and financial planning firm in London who I used to work at, so there's a tell there if you know my CV. And I was quoted, he was quoted saying that what I was doing was a really silly idea and that I was half in my market. And, you know, you shouldn't do that. So in financial planning or mortgage brokering terms, that's also saying niching in any way is not really done. But I was just determined to make sure that this was something that was really about helping women. And so even though I had the people in the industry saying, she's mad, fast forward, 2019, and I won Female Financial Advisor of the year from the Women in Finance Awards. And so I started off with the industry saying, you're mad, you're crazy, what are you doing, to being celebrated. So what that tells you is that you have to stick with what you believe in, no matter what or who is telling you that it might not be right. And I had, and over the years, I had family members tell me that what you're doing is crazy, you know, just go back and work in a bank, or, you know, it's not working, this is too hard, you know, you've got the kids to think of, you've got this to think about, you're working too hard, you're doing too much. And I probably was, like, there was only caring about me, right? But I was so determined and passionate about what I do that I was going to make it work. And I did. But it always came from a place of, who am I serving? Who am I here to help? Who am I here to look after? What message am I here to serve? And a few years ago, so it would have been 2017, I did a TEDx talk and it was about empowering women with their finances. And at that time, I had to put this talk together and, you know, it was a TEDx talk, so I had to make sure it was good. So I delved into research and I delved into what was happening and why I felt certain things were happening, and I had to articulate my story and where I was coming from, and that allowed me to really dig a bit deeper into my passion as to why I do what I do. So primarily this podcast and what I'm about is empowering women with their finances, and it's something that I just feel like is overseen. So women, more so now, they're the glass ceiling. Women at boardroom level is a real thing. It's a corporate governance in a lot of large corporate businesses that they have a balanced equality in their workforce, which is fantastic. But women are still tending to take caring roles. So nurses, for example, they're still tending to do jobs possibly that are part-time, so after having children. And, you know, that's a, if we go back to many years ago when women didn't work so much and men did, we've moved on an awful lot since then. But still, the makeup when it comes to money, women tend to have gaps in savings, gaps in pensions. And the gaps are closing, but there's still the percentages are that much more that men are financially better off. And even when women divorce or they're reliant on partners for pensions and savings and, you know, financial stability, that's not always forthcoming. So finances start to get quite complex now. There is no black and white like they used to be 50 years ago. It's not the 50s or 60s, 70s anymore. So women are looking after children and they're possibly having to fill gaps for themselves, fill gaps for the children. And finances aren't always quite as clear cut. So you've got this sort of newer way of finances being managed alongside this financial empowerment. But there's times where in both realms, so depending on the age of an individual, I see it all the time, whether they're in their 30s or they're having children, if they're in their 50s and they're, you know, the partner's possibly always worked. Or whether they're somebody that's in a, you know, the female is the main breadwinner. There's that lack of bigger picture planning, the bigger picture, seeing the bigger picture and looking further ahead than just a year or 2 years, looking much further ahead than that, looking at their financial horizon. So, and I see that in my own family with family members, you know, not having the financial stability or financial independence that they would strive for themselves and seeing them struggle. And I saw it all the time when I worked in the bank. I've seen it for many years as a financial advisor in my own business. And so it's something that I've just become actually more and more passionate about. I feel like I'm banging the same drum and I've been banging this same drum for 8 years now. But I don't come from a single parent female family. I actually come from a single parent father background. So I add to that equation of wealth in terms of people's backgrounds and their mindset. So when I was doing the TEDx talk, I had to really delve deep into really what this bigger purpose was. And I truly believe that with financial equality, for it truly to happen, so the wealthy are getting wealthier and the poorer are getting poorer, that equality wealth gap is only getting bigger year in, year out. And 2020 with COVID is only going to make that wider. Therefore, with women being financially empowered, that will therefore be brought to the kitchen table more, discussed more. And I believe that therefore that will be passed on to children and generationally things will start to change and shift. And I do start to see that with some of my female clients that are younger millennial, before Xennial, late 20s, early 30s, they are wanting to be more financially empowered. They are wanting to learn and engage and accept that there's a level of mindset that's required to make that happen. So my passion is around, you know, making people also see that regardless of your background, that doesn't leave you with the state of where that's what your finances or your future looks like. And when I was writing I wrote a book in 2016 when I was pregnant, and it came out in 2017. Which is currently not available as of when I'm recording this. It's back on under the table, not on the shelf, because it's a book. But while writing that book, people kept telling me, you've got to tell your story, Rebecca. It's really interesting, and what you've overcome and what you've done, and I felt really uncomfortable doing that. I think as women, we don't like to sort of shine the light on ourselves too much. And I've got better at that, but to me it's about sharing parts of the story that would help or other people that can resonate with. And by going, having to do that process, having to write this chapter about myself, and I related it into more of my financial journey, it was a really interesting process for me to do, because it did make me think about what my upbringing was like. And there's a story in the book that I'd like to share with you, which is around a pair of trainers. So do you remember in the, if you're old enough, you will, in the early 90s, Nike released the Air Max Bubble trainers, and they were absolutely so expensive. I think at the time they're probably like £150, which based on inflation now, they're probably the equivalent of £200 or £300, which for my family makeup, which was two adults, my grandparents living in a house with my dad, so three adults and two children, and my dad worked, I wouldn't call it abundant. I'd say we were stable and people were, we were happy. But it wasn't like an abundance of wealth. We didn't talk about pensions and investments, or it wasn't an entrepreneurial spirit kind of thing. It was, you get your paycheck, you work for the same place for 30, 40 years, they give you a pension, and if you've got any spare money during the week, you can take that to the pub and spend it. That was the extent of financial planning in that environment. And love my family. It was what it was. So at that time, asking for a pair of trainers for my birthday, for which, you know, to my dad would be like a third or a, you know, quite a big chunk of a pay packet. He would see that as absolutely ridiculous money to spend on some, like a pair of trainers. And at that time I was a tomboy. I had hand-me-downs from my older brother. So the idea of spending that kind of money on one item was ridiculous. But I actually didn't want the Air Bubble Air Max. So before that, they were something called a Reebok had a hexagon bubble. Like, they literally came out just a little bit before. I'm not even sure if it was, maybe my perception was it came out before, but it was around that same sort of time. And they were white with this green sole, and they had a hexagon shaped air bubble in the bottom and like pink laces. And they, to me, they were like this between this feminine girly, but they were still trainers. They weren't sort of high heel girly shoes type of thing. And I so wanted them. And my mum, who I saw and I had a good relationship with growing up, but we didn't see her all the time. She was married to a older gentleman, and she was a manager of a hair salon. And, you know, she would have to save up for something like that, but she wasn't looking after a larger family unit. And she was able to save for that kind of thing and be able to treat us more with those treats and things. And she bought me these pair of trainers, and my dad was really not happy about it. He just saw it as such a waste. But you know what? I wore those trainers every day for probably about 2 years. I literally, they weren't white anymore. They became like this awful grey brown colour. And I was out all the time on my bike playing. But what that told me is it told me a lot about financial success. It told me a lot about money. It told me and set certain precedents in my mind about having money, working for money, and mindsets around what's possible. And I'd encourage you to do the same. I'd encourage you to think about, are there any sort of key wants or desires when you were growing up that has set your sort of wheels in motion to be where you are today, and to be where you maybe can't see or foresee what that future might look like, because your past does not dictate your future. And my story, I think, would be a proof to that. So what is she really going on about? What am I really going on about? So Scottish Widows are an amazing firm who do a lot of research in regards to women and retirement and savings. And their 2019 report was a really great report, in terms of, it was one of the first reports I've read in the last 8-9 years that started to show that the gap between men and women is closing, but still 37% of lower middle earning women have opted out of a workplace pension because of other financial commitments. And 55% of women feel that they're not being adequately prepared, or they're not adequately prepared for retirement. And, you know, this is, I think, a great great issue. And what does it come back to? Often it comes back to other challenges that women have, where they're juggling childcare commitments, you know, the work, maybe working part time. There's a lot of financial stress. And I really feel that being more financially abundant means that those women will be able to overcome a lot more of those challenges, bring more money and income into the households, grow wealth, grow their financial education, and equally do that for their families and show their families how it can be done. And hopefully, I feel over time, and it's not going to take 1 or 2 years, I think it's going to be a number of years, that actually we can start to bridge that gap between men and women even further. And we'll be able to pass that legacy on to our children, meaning that break this ongoing cycle of issue for future generations. So let me tell you a little bit about how I start to help people and where I started in terms of my, well, what makes me the right person to help people to do this. So I started in financial services when I was 19. And I basically didn't come to it from a financially wealthy, astute family in that respect. They're a loving, lovely family, loved them all. However, I recognise where there was areas that weren't encouraged. And I certainly wasn't encouraged. I wasn't great at school. I wasn't somebody that was able to pick things up very quickly when I was at school. And I think that now, and I see it in my children, there's so much pressure on kids performing and doing well. And I sometimes, as parents, I recognise that that's sometimes not coming from the child, that's actually coming from us as parents. And but I see with my children, and particularly what my daughter, what she's like at school, and I sort of try and encourage her good points and what she's good at. But when I was at school many years ago now, what we're talking, 25 years ago, those skill sets weren't seen and they weren't acknowledged and they certainly weren't encouraged. So it was all the expectations around English and maths that I wasn't great with. So I left school at 15 and my first job was strawberry picking in a field. And to get through college, I worked in factories, fruit packing, to pay for myself to get through college. And once I finished my college qualifications, I got an office job. And that was like, you know, I think, you know, Becky's doing quite well. She's doing okay for herself. The expectations were probably continue to be fruit packing. You know, there was no great expectations from anybody really. And at least of all myself, but I had this drive. I had this drive that I wanted to, you know, do okay for myself, to have a good job, to be able to pay for things myself. I never thought that things would be done for me. I knew that I'd have to just get on myself. So that's what I did. And it was quite a funny story is that I started working in a bank as a temp, and this would never happen these days, but I was actually made redundant from my office. I was a head receptionist at 18 and I was made redundant. It was an engineering company and the firm shut down. They were bought out by a large corporate and then they decided to shut it down, which was a real shame. It was a very long-standing firm. And I was made redundant, and for 6 months I temped through an agency, and my last temping job was in a job centre in Sheerness in Kent. So it wasn't exactly a very attractive job, and you, even in the height of the summer, you couldn't wear flip-flops because there was fleas in the carpet. not a great place to be. But it was a Friday afternoon and I was basically saying, I'm gonna have to sign on Monday. I've got no other jobs coming through. I was 19 years old. I didn't know what I was gonna do, but I sort of wasn't overly worried about it. But I had a phone call, and the temp agency said, we've got a job for you on a Saturday. And I said, I'm not gonna go and work in a fruit packing factory again. That's not what I want to do. And they said, no, it's working in a bank. Well, I was just like 18 years old. I was 18 years old. I'd only just opened up a bank account. And my dad had done that for me through a building society. I didn't even understand what banks do. You get paid the salary, your bank, money goes in it. That was my understanding. I didn't understand overdrafts, credit cards, mortgages, nothing. I was no concept. I didn't even really understand direct debits or anything. So the next day I turned up at this bank and it was Alliance and Leicester. So it doesn't exist anymore. And at Alliance and Leicester, there was all the staff were sick or on holiday. And they brought in this sort of regional, they called it a regional relief. So they go around training branches, firefighting problems. And I was there with two or three other temps that we equally had no idea, like myself. She was lovely. Her name was Emma. I remember her really clearly. She had blonde, really tight, curly hair. She took us down to the basement and there was this table with loads of leaflets on with things like Easy Saver and Notice Account. And I had a quick flick through, but I didn't really understand what was going on. And that was my trading. She said, I'm just going to go upstairs and set up the tills and open up the safe. So up she went, opened the safe, opened up all the tills. We went up, opened a drawer, and it was literally like a desk drawer almost, and like a normal key lock. And opened the drawer, and there was more money in this drawer than I'd ever seen. And there was a queue round the block, literally. It was when people went to their bank on a Saturday morning. And it would never happen in this day and age, but it happened then. And obviously, from a security perspective, I'd done all the checks through the agency, so they knew that I was secure. And I started serving clients with Emma standing behind myself and two others, and started serving clients. And within 2 months, I was taken on employed. I became head cashier, and the rest is history. At the age of 28, I was a regional sales manager and I ran a team of financial advisors and mortgage brokers. So I was very good at helping clients. I was very good at helping my team. I was able to listen, digest the information and make sure that I was listening to clients' needs and their wants and their demands. So as you can imagine, I've got sort of quite a broad knowledge base, and I've been customer facing for over 20 years now. But what happened shortly after that is it was 2007 and the recession was coming, and I announced I was pregnant with my first child. I have two children, and I was made redundant when I was 14 weeks pregnant, and I thought it was the worst thing that could ever have happened to me. But actually, retrospective, it wasn't. And I went on pretty much on maternity leave straight away. I was made redundant. There was no jobs available. And the April of 08, when my daughter was born, the recession was officially announced. There was no jobs in financial services. And I would probably say it was one of the lowest parts of my career. So much so that I had a medical condition. So I had an underactive thyroid, although it was undiagnosed, and I had to have what's called a thyroidectomy with half my thyroid removed, which was quite a serious operation. So I went through quite a rocky period, and everyone just said to me, I'll just go back and work in a bank. And I was a bit reluctant to do that because I'd sort of come so far, going back to where I'd started from eight, nine years ago. I really felt like I'd lost my identity. You know, when you go to a barbecue or something and you meet someone and they say, oh, what do you do? And you used to tell them what you did. I did that with such pride. And at that point, I didn't have a label. I had the label mum, and just a mum. And we say this like it's nothing. And I would probably say being a mum is one of the most valuable, challenging jobs that I have ever done. Out of all the jobs that I've done, and it challenges you every day. So I'd actually say that's one of the most fulfilling jobs. And I don't like myself, and that's not kind to myself. I don't like that I used to think that of myself, but I sometimes feel that we have these thoughts and feelings, and we're supposed to have them to allow ourselves to grow and to form into the next, like a butterfly, form into the next version of ourselves. So I look back on that time now, I wouldn't say quite fondly, but certainly without any negativity or historic negativity to myself. And so I went to a job interview at a bank, and this was at a time where I was signed on. I had to go to the job centre and sign on. I couldn't quite understand why they wouldn't let me take my umbrella in, and I think apparently that's because you might hit people with it. you know, it's just such a different way of life and place to be. So I they didn't even know what to do with me. I went in with a folder. It was all, you know, labelled and in sections and all the jobs I'd applied for. And there was just no jobs in financial services in 2008. So when a job came up in a bank, I thought, okay, this is maybe what I do need to go and do. And this was at a particular well-known high street bank at the Halifax. And I was going as a job interview for a cashier, which is what I'd done back when I was 18, 19 years old. And I sat down with these really young looking individuals and I felt like, well, I've just got to fly through this. I've just got to blow them out of the water because, you know, my background and what I've done and, you know, this is easy for me. And they sat down and they said to me, okay, so we're going to ask you 10 questions. Here's a piece of paper and a pencil, and we would like you to give us the answer. Now, bear in mind at this time, I'd lost a lot of my confidence. I'd had an operation. I'd gone for several interviews and I was overqualified, so not getting them. I'd had my first baby. My thyroid causes hormonal and stress issues. I wasn't like the best version of me. I wasn't the best version of me. That's what I would say. And I wasn't confident in where I was or who I was. So I'm sitting there and the first question they ask is, someone comes into the bank and they've got 20 bags of 50p's, 5 bags of 2p's, 6 bags of 5p's, 2 £5 notes, 10 £20 notes and 1 £50 note. And they want to put it into their account, which is a balance of £269.59. And they want to then take out as a check for £150. How much would that leave in their account? Go, give us the answer. I sat there completely. Are you joking? This is really what you want. This is how you're going to assume that as I can do the job when you usually have a computer and a calculator and all those things to allow you to do it. You want me in my head with this piece of paper and pencil to work that all out and give you an answer. And at that time, because of my confidence levels, I just wasn't able to deal with it. I gave them a very rough answer. I thought, I'll just move on to the next one. Surely they're not all going to be like this. No, they were all like that. And after two or three questions, I just broke down. I put the pencil on the table. I said, I'm really sorry, I can't do this. I walked out and I was throwing it down with rain. I'd never forget walking up Bexley Heath High Street in Kent, out of the Halifax, and walking home in the pouring rain, thinking, I'm just not cut out for this. Maybe I'm just not good enough. Everything that everyone thought when I was a kid, they were right. Up to now, I'd fluked it. And that's an important story to tell you, because when I tell you now what I've then gone on to achieve, I think we all have periods of our life that are low ebbs, but it actually makes us a more rounded, more, you know, a better person. When I was 21, I got into a lot of debt and I was quite negative about that. I got into a huge amount of debt and I had to pay for myself to get out of that debt. And so those people that we go through those low points of our, with these ebbs and flows through life, we judge ourselves and it really can be quite a downward spiral. Well, fast forward a few years and I'd sort of got a part-time job and I'd built my confidence back up and I was feeling a lot better. I started back advising again and I did that for around a year or so. But what I didn't enjoy was the hierarchy. And even though I was self-employed, it meant that I was being dictated to as to what I should do and how I should do it and what advice I should give my clients. And it was done in such an uncomfortable way that, for example, if I went and saw a client one evening and I got home late at night, the next morning I'd have to have all the details, national insurance numbers, names of their children, age of their children, like literally everything inside and out by 10 o'clock the next morning. Well, the next morning I've been looking after my daughter, who was a toddler at the time, and she'd be sitting there playing on the floor and I'm sitting there on my laptop and it just didn't feel right. It just didn't feel right. So I thought to myself, hang on a second, I've had this great career. I know I can do this job and I'm really good at it. My clients love me. Maybe I should just start my own business. I've done my old job. I was senior sales manager and my boss was a sales director and I was pretty much doing his job for him. I was putting all his presentations together, all his stats together. I was doing a great job. So why can't I run my own business and manage my own business? I can do that. There's no why, I can. So in starting my own business in 2011, I started Evolution for Women, and we changed in round 2017 to Evolution Financial Planning. So it did what we sort of say, it said it on the tin, really. And then I've evolved from there into having my own mentoring and coaching programs under my own name, Rebecca Robertson, Evo. So with regards to the business journey, I went on to win customer service awards, financial advisor awards. I've helped thousands of women when it comes to financial matters. I'm a financial advisor, an independent financial advisor. And I've wrote a book and I've done a TEDx talk. So hopefully what I hope to put across there is that I'm somebody that's sort of comes from humble beginnings and somebody that's had to overcome many obstacles. Like, we all have a story to tell. We all have something to share. And everybody has a relevant piece at the table, regardless of who, what, why, and when. And the passion for me for doing this podcast, particularly though sharing some of my knowledge, is also primarily around sharing other people's stories, other women's stories. So we'll be doing some what we call the Wealth Series stories, where I'll be talking to some amazing women around their stories and around what wealth means to them. And now there's often a similar theme when it comes to what wealth means to people. And just thinking that through and hearing other people and resonating with other people can then engage and get your brain from an unconscious to a conscious thought patterns, which can start to improve financial situations in small building block senses. So often when I'm talking to women about what wealth means to them, and it's similar for myself, it's about coming from a place of abundance and thriving, that they can be generous with their friends and generous with their children without having to penny pinch, spoil the grandchildren, to travel, to look at possibly, you know, paying for private schools or university costs, feeling secure and feeling that they're not in a place of lacking, so that they can get to a point in their life where they're actually feeling that they've got a real secure future. So women are working harder and harder to achieve these things, but actually, have we got the fundamental financial education and basics in place to actually build from there? And I hope this podcast will A, get women to think about these elements, to think about their own stories, to think about their own mindset, to create the future that they're looking for and build for a legacy for them and their family's future. So I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Please do leave a review. I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear your feedback, and recommend to your friends. Take care.
Would you like support on how to adapt to your money mindset? You can find our link in the bio to download our How to Future Proof Your Finances by Adapting Your Money Mindset now.